You are listening to Infinite Lives. Hey everybody, this is Dan P with Infinite Lives, and I am joined once again with Dan Fedor from Blue Bottle Games, who's also the creator of Neo Scavenger.
How's it going, Dan? Pretty good. How are you doing?
Pretty good. So I think last time I talked to you was back in May. So how was your summer?
It was pretty good. Still working most of the summer, but I actually got married in July, so that took a chunk out of it.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, things have been going pretty well, and I'm actually hoping to get final release for Neo Scavenger done any time now. I've been aiming for September all year, and I blew that date, so but that's the way it goes.
Yeah, we're pretty close. There's a couple nines in that last version that I downloaded.
Yeah, I'm cramming as many nines in there as I can.
So what? When do you think that you think by the end of the year, or I mean, you know, if you can say,
I can try to. Like I said, I was actually aiming for September, yeah. And at this point, I feel like the critical path stuff and necessary features are all in there. Mm-hmm. So it's a little bit more tweaking, balancing, bug fixing, and sort of optional content at this point.
Okay.
So technically, I could pull the trigger at any time, but there's a couple more things I want to toss in there. But I'll probably try and get it out before Christmas, just so I can relax over the holidays.
Okay. So here's a question that I don't know if you'll be able to really answer. But I mean, how do you know when a game's done? Like, I mean, is it ever done? I mean, I've heard it before that. You know, games are never done. They're just released.
Yeah, but that's probably the best way to put it. And I think that goes for any type of creative endeavor. Like any artist I've talked to, any musician, mm-hmm. They all pretty much say the same thing. You just have to kind of cut your losses at some point. yeah. You'll always have regrets or things you wish you had done differently. But if you don't release, you don't release, right?
So. Yeah. So how are you? Do you have like some kind of idea? Like, okay, this is 1.0. When I get to this point, this is 1.0. Or are you still trying to feel it out, or you know you're not exactly sure?
Had a pretty good idea, I guess, of the functionality that I wanted as core functionality. And I think I probably achieved that before I achieved content complete. So I would say probably by the time April rolled around, last time we spoke, I know we started talking in April by email, but we probably actually had a conversation on Skype in May.
Yeah, I should have looked at my emails beforehand. That's professional.
Yeah, I didn't either. So. but I think it was around then that I was starting to look at the last few things I wanted to add, and most of that was made up by content. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if I had forever to work on it, there's a huge list of things that I could add in terms of features. But at some point, I'd like to kind of evolve the technology to the next step, and I can't really do that in the game that's there now. Like, I'd like to start exploring some new technologies. So
yeah.
It makes sense to kind of put a fork in it at some point.
You'd be basically be creating another game, and you'd still have this game.
Yeah.
So it'd be kind of like you're starting from scratch if you're like, oh, I'm going to try to change the whole technology behind the game and things. I see that.
Yeah. Um,
So is it different nowadays where, because I, you know, like I got this on early access and you know, you have this on Steam. I don't know what other platforms do you have this on?
Right now it's on the Windows, Mac, and Linux and browser formats. Mm-hmm. But in terms of stores, it's actually on my Blue Bottle Games site. It's on Steam. It's on Desura, Shiny Loot, Indie Game Stand, and was briefly available in bundles for Groupies and Humble Bundle.
Mm-hmm.
And in retrospect, that I think they coincidentally got me to a good place today, but I probably won't do it that way in the future just because it's a headache to kind of maintain all of those sites every time there's a new build.
Oh, gosh. I could imagine that.
Yeah. So it, in for a while, I actually had not only the main beta, but there was a Yukon edition and a demo. And having three builds per platform, per website, and it got to the point where builds were taking me like multiple days to complete. So I've actually scaled back a bit, and I only update the beta on a regular basis and the demo very infrequently. And I stopped doing selling the Yukon edition, but I still have to support it. So,
how does this change, like, kind of, you know, what a release is, what 1.0 means, with, like, you know, with this early access going on? Because I mean, you know, how we were talking before, you know, like if you were you know, other creative endeavors, you know, you have to release it at some point. But, I mean, kind of technically, you know, the game's kind of released. Like, you know, I've been playing it for, you know, several months. You know, I just got back into it this weekend because we had an extra live stream, actually, and me and my friend were playing it. And I got to see a bunch of the changes. But, you know, back to my original point about, so, you know, how does that change, like, you know, the creative endeavor about, like, you know, getting to 1.0 or you know, how you view releases and those kind of things?
I think that'll be interesting to see on an industry-wide scale. I know for me, the game has been available for sale more time than it hasn't, I guess, if I want to say it like that. So I actually started development in May 2011.
Mm-hmm.
It went up for sale in March 2012 as a beta, and it's been under development that entire time. So the release window, I guess, is almost 2 years, 2.5 years now, and I'm just starting to put the bow on it. And I think that on one hand, I've cheated. I've basically released a game, found out what I did wrong, and then fixed it, and then, you know, continually released it over time.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, it produced a good game, like one that I'm happy with, one that most of the customers are happy with, and I think I'd like to do something similar the next time, maybe not 2.5 years of beta, but at least a large enough window where I can make the necessary changes to respond to feedback.
Yeah. So do you think that this is something that, like, you know, I see it a lot on the indie level, you know, I mean, especially part of it is also just to fund a game too, because, you know, guys making it on their own and everything like that. That's a, you know, kind of hard to keep up with monthly expenses and all of those kind of things. But is it something that you see that would actually filter over to, like, the big companies, like, you know, EA, BioWare, Activision, those kind of things, where they're releasing these games, like, way ahead and letting people purchase them and kind of updating it and bringing it to 1.0 status?
I'm trying to think of specific examples, but I think that's already the case for a fairly large number of major releases. Definitely MMOs sort of follow that model.
That's true.
like Shadowrun Returns probably, I mean, they released a DLC, which in its, which was kind of like a remake of the original plus a DLC campaign. Mm-hmm. And I imagine that was based on a lot of feedback from their initial release. I get the feeling that if major studios can find a way to position it so that it doesn't upset the customers, mm-hmm. they'll probably do it more. But I can also see, like, was it Battlefield 4? SimCity, even The Sims 4, I think, are some EA examples where the game needed more time to incorporate feedback, fix bugs, and that sort of thing at the time it was launched, and they received a lot of flack for it. Were they an indie, people might have been more forgiving, but it's EA, sure. So they aren't given quite as much slack. but yeah, I think I see it as a valid approach as long as customers know what they're getting into.
Yeah, that's true. So how do you balance like fan input and input from, you know, your own direction of where you want the game to be? Because I know you, you listen to a lot of fan feedback and those kind of things. But have you had problems or even just challenges about you know whether or not, like, you know, I really think that really should be going this direction, but I'm getting a lot of, you know, a lot of feedback in another way that, you know, I should change something.
I guess there's definitely a contingent of players that want a different game than what I'm building. Okay. And three examples which come to mind, they're perennial suggestions. Base building, non-permadeath, and multiplayer. And I guess companions. That would be four. So all four of those things are things that I agree would be cool. They'd be interesting to explore, but for various reasons, either technical or design, I decided I wasn't going to do those things. And it is difficult to tell people, you know, no, the suggestion that you've given is valid, but I'm not going to do it. 'Cause I don't like to disappoint people. But on the other hand, if I took every suggestion and tried to do it, I'd never get anything done. There's just too many voices to accommodate everybody.
Yeah.
What I found that worked really well, I used to do a feature voting page. And for that, I would actually, in advance, make a list of everything I was willing to do and then let people guide me in terms of those features, which ones were higher priority for them. Mm-hmm. So that way I was still building something that I considered to be a cohesive vision, but I let players sort of guide my efforts in ways that they would enjoy more. And that was a nice compromise between building what I wanted to build, but also building what customers wanted me to build.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that seems like a very good middle ground.
No wrong answer.
Well, there were things that you were thinking of anyway, and you got them to give a sense of choice as well. So
exactly,
they're participating in the process. So how different is your initial vision for this game back in 2011 when you first started work on the game on Neo Scavenger and where it is now? Like, is it vastly different from what, has it changed a lot in the last 3 years or is it around what you thought it would be like by this time?
I guess the genes of the game are still there. So I had a design document probably in the middle of 2011, which talked about four main experiences I wanted to have. And I don't even know if I can remember them word for word. I know, like, rigorous inventory management was one of them. Like, I wanted the sort of weight sensitive, space sensitive inventory management. The rigorous survival is another one that persisted through the entire project. One that that failed was being able to approach an encounter with anything that you want and have it be supported. So anytime you're presented with a choice in NeoScavenger right now, you're shown a list of all of the things in your inventory that would actually make a difference. The original spec for the game was broader than that. It was you look through your inventory and you throw items or skills or whatever at the question at hand, and the game responded in an appropriate way to those inputs. Since I'm limited in terms of what I can produce, I quickly found out that that was way too much content for me to support. And it also, it was a usability issue. Like, if 99% of the items in your inventory produce a null response or an uninteresting response, you end up spending a lot of time just sort of spinning your wheels, which isn't fun. So,
yeah. Ketchup packets at the guy.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, I really wanted to replicate the pen and paper role playing experience. And part of that, part of what makes that interesting is you throw the ketchup packet at somebody and the DM finds a way to roll with it, but the computer isn't quite as flexible. So
not yet.
Not yet. Yeah. Someday.
I'll never have to leave my house.
Yeah.
How do you feel the response to the game has been? I think I asked you this back in May, but it's been a number of months, and you know, I know it's getting closer to release and everything like that. So how do you feel, like, a fan response? Have you gotten a media feedback from the gaming press or things like that? Like, you know, is there any kind of what's the response been like?
It's been good. I actually, when I first started the game, I was researching some stuff for the horror supernatural elements, and I came across a quote from an author who was, I think, one of the precursors of Lovecraft.
Mm-hmm.
And the way he described a book that he wrote was it has sold finely and seems to have pleased a good many people.
Ah.
And I said, that sounds great. I want to be there in a couple of years. And I think I'm there now. Like, I feel like I've made my investment back, and I'm able to sustain myself and start a new project on what I've earned. And the feedback that I'm getting is pretty positive. Like, the recent changes on Steam actually helped me gauge that a lot better, because now you can see the percentage of positive and negative reviews.
Oh, that's true, yeah.
And I was thrilled when I saw NeoScavenger had a 96% approval. And I think it was about 1,000 reviews. So knowing that even if it's a really niche game and some people hate it, the niche that it's in, the people really seem to like. So I've been pretty excited about that. And obviously I've been thrilled at the Rock Paper Shotgun coverage that I got recently. And I think almost everyone that I talk to, if they like this kind of game, they seem to like NeoScavenger. And if they don't, then they understand why they don't like it. And that's totally cool. There have only been a couple issues that I've received feedback on. A lot of that is just poor execution of, like, UI and polish.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, it's whatever art I could scrape together or pay a few people to do. And I think the art is somewhat inconsistent and a little sloppy in places. But that's just me not being able to fulfill all of the content obligations. And also me fulfilling the obligations years ago versus now, like my talent level has sort of changed over time.
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess overwhelmingly it's been good from both fans and reviewers, and I'm pretty happy about that.
Yeah, I'm looking at it. 1,015 reviews, 96% reviews are positive. So we got to figure out what's up with those 4%ers.
Well, I actually, for a long time, I would read them, and if it was if it was something that I could comment on, I would. So like a lot of times it was, I couldn't do this. So the game was really frustrating. And if it was something that I could help them with, I'd chime in and say, oh, you know, there might be a way to fix this, or maybe it was a legitimate bug and, you know, thank them for pointing it out so I could fix it. So I actually got a pretty good sense for what the negative reviews were. And I think, a lot of it is user experience. Like, people want to like the game, but they bounce off of the UI or the control scheme or the other thing that I think tends to come up a lot is, they get frustrated by the randomness of the game. Mm-hmm. So there's quite a lot that gets randomized each game, whether it's weather, the map, and the abundance of certain resources. And I don't do a lot of safety netting in that respect. I do one thing to prevent against hypothermia in the first 24 hours, but even then, if you aren't familiar with how sleeping bags work in the game, which is kind of kludgy, it can be really easy to die of hypothermia, and I get a lot of flack for that. So there are like rough spots that I think people are legitimately concerned about.
Well, it's kind of like the, you know, going back to what fans want and what your vision is, it's running up against that, you know, one of the philosophies of the game where there is randomness and there is no safety net, and you know, maybe you just have a really bad game. Like that's just what happens.
Yeah.
Like while I was doing a live stream on Saturday, my buddy was playing, and he was alive for about 4 days, and we were desperately trying to find a lighter so that we could actually start a fire and clean off some of these rags so he could actually bandage himself. And we didn't find anything for like the whole 4 days. And, you know, we tried as hard as we could to scavenge.
That's actually, that's a good point, because I think of all the survival things in the game, that may be one of the ones that is most volatile in terms of availability. There are builds, character builds that you can do that are guaranteed to find a way to make fire. But if you don't have those, then the lighter is really it. And I'm thinking that before I launch, I should at least add one or two more types of ways to make fire, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how to do that without making it too gamey, but I'm going to be sort of looking into that in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. Oh yeah, I wasn't saying it as a complaint. I actually thought it added some fun and suspense to the game that we were playing, because, you know, after about the third day, we just had to just bandage ourselves, and we started getting sepsis, and you know, it got to the point where it was just like, you were just like, fuck it, we're just gonna fight everybody, and we're gonna drink all of our whiskey bottles that we've been saving up, and you know, we're gonna go down with a fight and stuff like that.
Blaze of glory time.
Yeah, blaze of glory, like you know, and we were kinda role playing the guy who was getting feverish and he was hopped up on painkillers and everything. So I guess what you mean, what you said earlier also, it's kind of you know, managing expectations of the game. Where, you know, I'm you know, after playing this game, you know, for several hours that I played, 22 hours, I think I have played. And, you know, I understand that, you know, this could be a run that ends in 8 hours, or this could be a run, one of my longest runs, I think, was like 20 days or something like that. I got to the city, and I had that, this is a much earlier build. But I had that what is it, the fake tag or something like that?
Okay.
That you could find, and then they kicked me out for a whole year, and I was just wandering the wasteland for a whole year. Well, not a whole year, but a whole 20 some days, because I didn't have anything else to do, and I was like, oh, I'm just gonna try to see how far I can take this.
Yeah, that actually comes up a lot, because if you follow the plot, it's quite easy to get yourself kicked out or exiled like you got. And a lot of people are like, so how do I get back in? Or will you add any way to get back in? And part of me is like, it'd be really cool for me to kind of do this, this shady quest where you're trying to, like, you know, surgically remove your, tracking, thing that they put in you. But on the other hand, it's like the consequences of decisions are part of what make the game interesting to me. So, making it possible to undo setbacks, sort of robs those setbacks of their power. So it's a tough choice. Like I kind of want to do both and I can't do both. So,
I think, I guess it's the, when the, you know, the people that I've gotten to play this game, you know, I've always told them that, you know, you're going to die and that's just what's going to happen. You're not going to, you know, even your second or third or fifth life, it's not going to be like, I'm just going to run through and see all the content in the game and then I can just move on to a different game. I saw the end and all that stuff. This is, you know, it's a game that you, every time you load it up, it's kind of a new experience.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I was trying to achieve was the ability to have different experiences every time, even in the encounters that you can have, which they're all scripted. I have to write every panel and hook up the logic to it, so I can't make that procedural. And trying to add diversity per playthrough to those, I think ended up resulting in a fairly short game. Like, if you're really good at what you do, you can get from beginning to the end of the game fairly quickly. But my hope is that one path is one of many paths you can reach the end via. And there's a lot of content that takes you away from the main path if you're interested in it, even though you're not forced to. Because, like you said, people are going to die a lot, so they're going to be sort of retreading familiar territory a lot, and to give them something else to do when they're walking those same footsteps would be ideal.
Is there anything that you know, anybody in the community, you know, the people who are playing the game, is there anything that has surprised you, like how people either handle situations or particular features in the game that they like, or kind of, you know, crazy builds or something like that?
The most recent one I can think of, one of my mods, Lynn, pointed out a use for Cornicola, which I had never even considered and I thought was really smart. So when you drink Cornicola, you get a caffeine buzz, and it sort of raises your body temperature and it gives you a little bit more energy, but then like an hour or two later you crash, which in cold weather, if you're not prepared for it, can really sneak up on you, and it makes you more tired. Net makes you more tired when you're done. So it was always kind of in my mind, like, I'm freezing to death. I'm just going to take this last shot of energy and hope that it carries me to when I get my next windfall. She pointed out that if you're in combat, you fatigue really fast because you're missing a lot. You're running, you're tackling, you're doing all these things. And battle oftentimes ends up just wearing you down until you pass out. But she noticed that the time scale in battle is so short that Cornicola lasts forever. And I was like, oh my, that is so smart. Like, you can totally take an energy drink while you're in a fight. And in the time scale of the fight, it makes a huge difference. Like, by the time the fight's over, you'll probably crash, but it can be the difference between life and death if you're right at the edge of fatigue.
I'm going to write that down and remember that.
So yeah, like every time I play now, I carry one just in case. Because, yeah, I thought that was pretty clever.
Because I actually used to throw those away or empty it out, because I'm like, I don't like the whole crash thing because it's just going to mess me up later.
Which was sort of the intended purpose of it. But
yeah. But I guess, yeah, if you know you're going to get into a big fight or something like that, or if you're in a tough battle, and yeah, that would probably be useful quite a bit.
Yeah.
Let's see. Feature voting. Let's see. So, Stepping away from just Neo Scavenger, what other games have you been playing? Or have you had any time to play any games recently?
I have. I've ramped up my game playing after the game went on Steam as early access. We started earning a bit more money, so I gave myself an allowance to start buying games again.
Nice.
And some of the ones that I've cracked into lately, I played PlanetSide 2 for a long time and then I stopped. And I decided to pick that up again about a month ago, and I had some fun playing that again. I really enjoy. I always liked Tribes 2, and I like the jetpack guy in PlanetSide 2 as a result. So I started fooling around with that. And ditto for Path of Exile.
I had a Path of Exile bug for quite a while. I've been quit since about like April or May. So I'm kind of scared of loading that up again.
Yeah, I think it lasts about a week, and then I think I always get to the same part. It's like middle of Act 2, and I'm starting to get tired of loot juggling.
Mm-hmm.
I really enjoy it for a while, and then I just kind of get tired of comparing loot to other loot. So I think I'm probably going to be looking for something new any day now. I'm trying to think of the last indie game I played, though.
Let's see. What have I been playing? Started playing this game called Always Sometimes Monsters. It's like a really... It's more story-based indie game. It was made in RPG Maker, of all things. But it's a cool little game. I started playing this game. It's on Steam called Minimum, where it's like a FPS team-based game with some of the MOBA elements, kind of like a Dota or League of Legends, but very simplified. But a whole lot of FPS stuff. So that's a pretty cool game. I recently played a. Well, it's not an indie game, of course, but Middle Earth: Shadow of Mordor. That's a pretty fun game if you're into the action Batman-esque genre, because they used a Batman fight engine from the.
I've heard a lot about that, and actually, I haven't tried any of the Batman games. Some people were comparing it to Dark Souls.
I don't know about. Well, I mean, I guess there could be. The cool thing in that game is that they have, like, this nemesis system where there's these orc captains who are, like, bosses of other orcs, and then there's war chiefs who are bosses of the captains. So each of them have, like, a randomized set of things that they're either afraid of or things that make them angry. They have different motivations. Like, some of them want to climb ranks and stuff, so they're trying to fight other orcs and everything like that. And when you fight them, if you beat them, they sometimes come back to life. You know, they'll try to hunt you down again. And if they kill you, you know, because you constantly come back to life, you're like an undead, like, ranger or something like that. And they actually increase in power. So I had this one guy who just had... He had a huge vendetta against me because we kept killing each other. And he had, like, he was missing an eyeball, and he was just all scarred up. But I couldn't attack him with any normal attack because he was completely immune to everything. So I had to lure him to, like, some fire and try to blow him up some way or something like that. But, yeah, it's a pretty interesting game.
Well, that sounds cool. The idea of giving your enemy a bit more of a face and a story is, I think, long overdue.
Yeah, it gets to the point where you're actually, like, I actually actively hated this guy because he would show up sometimes. Like, I'd be hunting other captains, you know, for the story and stuff, and he'd show up, and they have, like, different dialogue and be like, you know, like, last time was a mistake, this time I'm taking you down, or, you know, stuff like that. And it's just like, man, this guy just keeps showing up in, like, the most inopportune times, and it's really annoying.
I'm willing to bet money that there's code specifically for that. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, it's a pretty good game. I mean, there's a... I'm going to bet that there's probably going to be a lot of, you know, similar kind of systems in some of the larger mainstream games, some kind of Nemesis knockoff kind of system or something like that.
Yeah, but I think that that kind of stuff sends ripples through the industry, so mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. Something that I wrote down earlier, but I did not, I just out of order questioning. But we were kind of touching on a little bit of like how Neo Scavenger was received and everything. So I know you've been making games for quite a while and everything like that. How does criticism affect you? Like, was it something that used to affect you before, and you kind of, you know, you've kind of taken a more balanced approach to it, or is there just, you know, it kind of gnaws at you a little bit and kind of makes you try to, you know, do better or something like that? Like, how do you deal with criticism for, you know, things that you created?
It's definitely a skill that needs to be developed. I feel like I have a thicker skin for it now than I did originally. I actually feel like also I'm getting a better eye for what the intent of the comment was. So if the comment was criticizing a feature or criticizing a choice that I made in design, I can usually see the objective parts of it versus the subjective parts of it, and that helps sort of, I guess, help me to absorb it in a constructive way rather than just letting it get me down. Mm. I still do get like a pang of trepidation when I open up a review just in case it's bad. Yeah. I've read some that are pretty bad, but more often than not, the criticism ends up helping because it points out real weakness. And when it's positive, it feels good in contrast to having read something that's critical. Mm-hmm. So, like I said, I guess it's a skill that I've developed, and I feel like I can handle it pretty well. So,
yeah, I would, yeah. Every time I put out like a new podcast or some kind of video that we're doing, is just, yeah, I'm always just like, oh gosh, this is going to be the worst.
I think, you know, you just have to admit to yourself that there is a segment of people out there who totally do not dig what we do. And
it's true.
You know, if they comment, you have to be ready for it. So
what's the worst comment you've ever had?
What's the worst?
Or just something that maybe not directly individually to you, but something that you helped create or something like that. I mean, out of the field question, but
actually, one of the more frustrating things is not really an insult. It's the why didn't you add this? Quite often, I'll get a suggestion or some sort of feedback that's in the tone of, I can't believe you didn't add this. And the frustrating thing about it is quite often it's something that's on my list of really wish I could add this thing. Mm-hmm. So to have someone tell you, I can't believe you didn't add this, it's like, but I really would have. If I could have, I would have. And I mean, even now, like, there's a long list of things I still could add to the game. It needs a lot to be the perfect game, right? It's never going to get there. But at some point you have to kind of, you know, close it up and move it on to the next thing. And whether it's the whole game or just a feature within the game, I've had to do that, and I've left things not done. So, yeah. So that's actually one of the things that gets to me almost more than negativity, because it's like, I was so close. I could have done that, but, you mm-hmm. know, I didn't.
Well, you can save it for Neo Scavenger 2, now with more ketchup.
That's right. I'm looking forward to getting started on Neo Scavenger 2 or other games. I'm not sure if I'll go right into a sequel or if I'll kind of switch things up, but the idea of taking everything I've built, putting it in new new technology and kind of hammering out the weak parts and adding stuff that I've always wanted to add. Like it's sort of clean slate, but not entirely. And I'm looking forward to that.
Well, if I recall, I remember our conversation last time, you were talking about a World War One game that you had like an idea for or something like that, like an RPG. No, maybe not an RPG. I just remember we were talking about a World War One game and the lack of World War One games.
I know that we actually did a tech demo at BioWare.
Yes, that's what it was. That's what it was.
Yeah, that was, I think, our line of thinking at the time too. It was like nobody makes a World War One game. So. No, that was a lot of fun. And actually, researching the sort of decorative aspects of that genre, you know, like that was a time when instead of just pills and med kits, you would have like tinctures and salves and stuff. And it was kind of like another world. So.
Yeah, so there's this Ubisoft game that they released called Valiant Hearts: The Great War. I have it on my list to play, but I think it's like a puzzle adventure game with a story set in World War One and stuff. It kind of looks like a 90s adventure game, like point and click kind of thing. So I'm kind of curious to see what that is. But when you were talking about like the salves and those kind of things. There's a cool series, TV series. It's on, I believe, Showtime. It's called The Nick. It has what's that guy's name is? Clive Owen, and he plays a surgeon at the turn of the century. Well, I think like 1910-ish or something like that. So it's kind of cool because it's super graphic, so it's kind of hard to watch. But there's no real techniques for like modern surgery at this point, so they're just basically trying stuff, and it's really crazy because they're just like, well, let's see if this works, and they just cut this poor like woman open, and it's like, well, that didn't work, then she's dead. So it's like, oh god, like I know that they had to go through all of this stuff to get to where we are, but geez.
Yeah, people talk about time travel, and let me tell you, that's one of the reasons I don't want to go back in time.
Yeah, maybe like, maybe go back like 10 years or something. But
bring a doctor with you.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I guess that's why Doctor Who's so lucky.
I think you mentioned it, the new Shadowrun game, Shadowrun Returns. Mm. Did you play that?
I did. I actually played through the first campaign, Dead Man's Switch, and I played some amount of Dragonfall. I don't know how far through I got.
Yeah, I think that's around the same thing that I did.
Okay. I felt like I burned out pretty quickly on it the second time around. I enjoyed the combat for a while, but I kind of wished there was something other to do besides fighting. Mm-hmm. It almost felt like I was kind of being strung from one fight to the other instead of investigating.
Yeah, because it's a big part of the Shadowrun pen and paper game is the whole investigation.
Yeah. The investigation and like casing joints and planning the run, like. I still haven't really seen somebody execute that well, except maybe the Thief series. When the first Thief came out, I did spend a lot of time observing before I went in, which was cool. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd like to see games have done combat for a long time, and I think they've figured out how to make that fun, but it'd be nice to see other areas of gameplay emerge.
You know, Thief and were you a fan of the original Deus Ex?
Yep.
So Thief and Deus Ex, I think, comes up so many times in these interviews that I do of people who are making games now that, you know, have looked at those kind of games and like, oh wow, I want to do something like that. But it feels like nobody's really done that again. Nobody's done Deus Ex like how the original Deus Ex has done it. and the original Thief has done that kind of game. Mm. Do you think that's kind of nostalgia, kind of like masking some of the some of our memories of that game, or is it just something that maybe people can't replicate very easily?
Part of me wants to say that bigger budget games are starting to be shackled by the same issues big budget movies are. Mm. They know that if it's too inaccessible, whether or not it's good art, if they make it too challenging to understand or to become immersed in, then they are going to lose a large chunk of their investment. Thief and Deus Ex were not small games by any budgetary standard, but I think they did take more of a risk with both of those games by breaking the mold of competitive arena shooters that were pretty big at the time. And part of me thinks it's just whether or not you want to make a really cool game, you can't make one that that's going to alienate the majority of the market.
Mm-hmm. Especially if you're spending $100 million to market.
Yeah, 300 man years or 600 man years. So
yeah.
That all adds up. I'm trying to think. Like, I played Dishonored recently, kind of hoping for a rekindling of Thief spirit. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really last very long in that game. Like, it was beautiful. It was really a really unique setting. I thought the setting was quite cool, but I just, for whatever reason, I didn't feel very engaged, maybe just in the character. I didn't feel for his plight. I didn't feel like I was doing something important. The most interesting thing to me was actually just exploring the world, and that didn't last long enough.
Yeah.
I know some people, like, I think they honestly tried to recapture a lot of what made Thief cool. Like, I think it was an homage to Thief, but there was some magical element that they were missing, and maybe it is rose-tinted glasses. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of wonder sometimes, because when those games came out, I was 17 or 18, so I'm a much different person than I am back then, but I'd like to think that I would still enjoy that game even if it came out now.
Mm.
Nowadays. Is there any games that you're kind of looking forward to in the next few months, or something that you see on the horizon? There's a new Dragon Age.
Yeah, I'm curious to play it, but probably not for the same reason most people are. That'll be the first Dragon Age game that I'll have not seen anything behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So to kind of see how the project has evolved, and more interestingly to me, to maybe try and guess how the culture of the company has changed behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of divining from the game what world is like at BioWare Edmonton now. I still have friends there, but
yeah,
not all of them work on the project, and for NDA reasons, I don't really dig into the details much.
Of course.
I'd actually like to see sort of where it's gone since then. I've heard hints that they've kind of returned to their roots, which sounds pretty good, like getting back to tactical camera view. And
yeah, there is a tactical camera view now.
So that sounds like a step in the right direction, and I guess I'll have to see.
All right. Well, last question. I'll let you go. Have you had any opportunity to play any pen and paper games?
I haven't. Although I did buy one recently.
What did you buy?
World of Darkness.
World of Darkness. Hmm,
okay. It's not new. It's the new setting that White Wolf produced for Vampire et al. And I think it was out in 2004 or 5. But this one is kind of like describing the world without describing vampires or werewolves or anything specifically, and almost like an X-Files vibe. And I ended up buying it just because of the way that they describe storytelling techniques and how to handle the world building. The rules I kind of skimmed over because I wasn't going to run a campaign, but I wanted to read the supplemental stuff. I found it really enjoyable, and apparently they've got a couple other books, support books, in the same vein, like how to build good antagonists or good cults or good, there was another one I think that had to do with some type of creature or entity, but they've kind of taken, I guess, writing elements and made whole books about those, and you kind of pick and choose from their library to assemble the game you want to build.
If you actually had time, would you be able to, would you have a group of friends to play with or something like that? Or is it just now you're just more curious about the systems and the settings?
I tend to gravitate more towards reading rule books than playing these days. I live in a place which I don't have many nerdy friends. We're kind of here from my wife's degree. She's studying right now, and I think after that we'll probably end up moving back towards familiar ground or a major city. So for now, I've just been kind of cocooning, and I think there are one or two gaming groups in town, but even then, that's like a half-hour drive for me to get.
Hey, man, if you ever are in Seattle, we got a Friday night game that one of my friends works for Wizards of the Coast, so we play a bunch of stuff. We've been playing 5th edition D&D recently, and it's pretty cool. And they actually like playing Shadowrun more, which I think I told you before that it was kind of hard for me to get into because I don't know too much of the lore.
Right.
So they're having a conversation. I'm just like, I don't know. I wish I knew most of what you guys are saying, but...
Yeah, Seattle is actually on the short list. The only thing that probably wouldn't find me there is if my wife's Canadian, so there's an immigration issue,
yeah,
which I don't think will be an issue because I'm an American. But and my family's in the Northeast; they're over in New Hampshire.
Yeah, that's true.
So like, I kind of want to be near my family, but as far as places to live, Seattle's about as good as it gets. Especially like the combination of temperate rainforest mountains and a metro area that's very geek friendly.
Mm-hmm.
It's the convergence of all the things that I want except family. So.
Yeah, you just got to deal with the rain and you'll be fine.
I think I can handle it, but I say that now. I'm not there, right? So.
It's not so bad. Sometimes it's more frustrating, but I mean, you know, you probably deal with real winters. We have we'll have a week of snow and everybody will freak out. The whole city will shut down and then it will go away. And then that was our snow week.
My wife is actually, she's from Edmonton or from near Edmonton, which they get really cold and long winters there. And I couldn't stand it there. And here where we are, it's about perfect for both of us because we get some really nice snow, but it's over soon enough that we get spring and summer. And I think she's worried that Seattle won't have enough of a winter to really make her comfortable. So it'll be interesting to see
where
we end up. So,
well, you're not too far from the mountains. I'll stop selling Seattle. I think
you don't need to sell it.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. Yeah.
You need to sell it to my parents is what you need to do. So.
Oh, yeah. Just bring them over. It's a slow... Just sell them on the fact that, you know, it's the West Coast, so it's a little more relaxing. Everybody's a little more chill, and, you know, people kind of leave you alone.
If we get a house and they come out and visit, or if we have a kid, probably, that'll seal the deal.
All right, cool, Dan. Well, thanks for joining me again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, always fun to catch up and everything like that. So, yeah, keep in touch, and I'll be looking forward to 1.0 Neo Scavenger. Well, I'm going to get back into it this week and weekend, I think.
Awesome.
I was kind of letting it sit for a while and just kind of let the updates build up so it'd be really new when I play it again.
Mm. So. Well, I think it's getting to the point now where the major stuff is slowing down, so you picked a good time to wait.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. Well, thanks for joining again, and I'll talk to you again, hopefully.
All right, talk to you later. Thanks again.
Yeah, see you.
Bye.